So first I want to say thank you to SF MoMA for inviting me, and especially thank you to Margaret and Suzanne, two really inspiring women who have figured importantly in my Bay Area art experience, so thank you. I decided to talk today about an event that happened in the not-so-distant past, just last September. Part of what I think the concept of the avant-garde can do for us here and now in 2011 is to serve as a reminder of how important it is to be attuned as artists and people to our very particular present moment. Thinking about all that's been going on here in the U.S. around labor, immigration, and abroad, especially thinking about the many protest movements in the Middle East and North Africa just in the past few months, even make September 2010 feel a long way off. So what I'm going to talk about is an event called the Poetic Labor Conference, and it happened on Sunday, September 5th, 2010, from 1 o'clock p.m. to 7 o'clock p.m. in Oakland at the Studio One Art Center, which I have the address here. It's 365 45th Street in Oakland. And I think it's important that it was happening in Oakland because Oakland has a rich history of radical labor politics. It was the home of the Black Panther movement, student movement, anti-war movement. So that, I think, is sort of percolating throughout the event also. It was organized by poets Sarah Larson, David Brazil, Suzanne Stein, Brandon Brown, and Allie Warren. And I'm going to read the sort of their encapsulation of what they hoped the event would be that they had on their website. "We are convening around the notion of labor and poetics, because issues of labor and money are integral to so many of our lives as artists. We hope that gathering as presenters and participants will highlight the particularity of our struggle to do two jobs, that is, make artworks and earn a wage to support ourselves. For the many of us who are not employed by the university, the occasions for speaking in and with the group concerned with poetics and politics in a formal way are rare. We think and hope this gathering will be a positive model for thinking cooperatively in the future." And I'll read a list of the presenters. Pam Liu, Steve Farmer, Jason Morris, Lauren Levine, Brandon Brown, Rodrigo Toscano, Cedar Saigo, Chris Daniels, Dana Teen Lomax, Laura Moriarty, David Brazil, Andrew Joran, Vanessa Place, Sarah Larson, George Albin, Samantha Giles, and Kevin Killian. I remember that I rode my bike to BART, because I was living in San Francisco at the time. I now live in Oakland. Rode my bike to Studio One, and I was a little bit late, and I missed Pam Liu's talk. I went in, I was feeling really nervous, and I went in, I sat against the wall and kind of like tried to be inconspicuous. And according to photos, I was wearing a white V-neck t-shirt, black skinny jeans, and probably this belt that has metallic animals on it. I was feeling a little anxious that at worst this event could just be a collective bitch and moan fest about how much it sucks that we have to work jobs. Or maybe an attack on the academy, neither of which I felt really ready for or especially open to. Prior to this, we didn't talk about jobs. Life, work, writing were separate for most of us, even taboo. It got to the point where I felt like it was weird, uncouth, perverse to talk about what I was doing at work, even and especially if it was interesting, rewarding, or satisfying. We talked instead about our work, the writing, the reading. We gathered for readings and performances and drank and danced and talked and just generally had a really life-affirming good time. In the rest of our lives, I think many of us were feeling pretty trapped. I know I was. I was and still am doing what I call the piecemeal thing. I work as an editor for Post-Apollo Press part-time, and I teach poetry in schools and at a juvenile hall part-time. Never full-time, leaving time for writing, often stressing about money, commuting a lot. I do, however, care about my work, more and more it seems, which is in itself a new and sometimes disorienting feeling, to care about something other than art. Still, I know that my situation is rare. It seems like everyone else my age was and is working 9-to-5 office or retail jobs. that they felt little to no connection to, committing as much time theft as possible, writing, reading on the job, trying to preserve as much energy as they could for the after work hours, time for reading, writing, poetry readings, being social. The only other option seemed to be the loophole, become an academic. But even that seems impossible. At the time and still, everyone keeps saying there are no jobs. And besides, the safety of an institution seemed to signal a potential death. Death of spontaneity, death of independence, death of contact with the real community, becoming out of touch, distant, dying the death we were all dying every day in little ways at our day jobs, regaining vitality by going to readings, being social, drinking. It hurt a lot. I felt discouraged and desperate. Though my poet friends and I never talked about work, I knew that we were all getting by, I just didn't know how. It felt like all of my friends were performing the same magic trick at the same time, in secret. The Poetic Labor Conference couldn't have come at a better time. So I arrived late, I missed Pam Liu's talk, coming in just towards the end of Steve Farmer's. I think I spent those first few minutes just adjusting to the room, scanning it, trying to take in the temperature of the place. What was the mood? How were people responding? Who was there? Who wasn't there? Then Jason Morris started talking about his job as a bartender, describing the tasks, the glasses, the booze, the interactions, peeking at customers in the mirror behind the bar. I loved the specificity of it. Here was my friend in the world. Here he was using his artist's mind in the world. I imagine his considered kindness to the regulars, burnt out old guys who had no one to talk to. Lauren Levine spoke next, and whatever veil Steve and Jason had begun to ruffle with their subtle, particular, tender expressions of experience, Lauren began to twist and stretch by unfurling her own intricate web of relationships between life and work, writing work and work, co-workers and poets. Meaning and lack thereof in one's work and whether or not to care about one's job. She readily admitted that she did in fact care about her work, cared about her co-workers, felt a sense of accomplishment, of teamwork and community at work, and that yes, she felt this with her poetry community too. She navigated between the two. I felt relieved. Lauren broke the spell. Throughout the day, poets revealed their keys to their magic tricks, teased apart the veil, discussed the makeup of its fabric, peered through it. By the end of the day, that stupid veil, whatever had kept us from relating to each other as people, not just poets, but people who exist in the world, in the Bay Area, in offices and schools and homes and grocery stores and museums, amidst other people who are not poets, was a raggedy piece of crap. Labor. What is labor? Asked Chris Daniels. I see labor as an attribute of human behavior which transforms reality. You make a chair, you've transformed reality. You work as a clerk, you take a pile of paper here and move it there. You transform reality. You teach for a living. Hopefully you want to transform a human mind. You want to help someone else transform reality. And in your work, you are, hopefully, transforming reality. Artistic labor, he went on to say, has the potential also to transform reality. It felt so good just to have these things named, to discuss terms. We were talking, and when I had dinner with friends after the conference, we kept talking, and at the bar after, we kept talking. We had always talked, but not like this, somehow not quite like this. Since then, over the past several months, I felt more and more like I can talk about anything, and that I want to. More than anything, I want to talk. I feel like I'm going to explode most of the time. We talk in living rooms, around kitchen tables, around those two small tables that always wobble at the bar, during walks, in bed with our sweethearts. What do we want to do? What can we do? What's possible? What have others done in the past? There's movement happening, maybe not a movement, but movement, change. In his autobiography, David Hilliard, chief of staff of the Black Panther Party, says, flux, flux, flux. Huey Newton always says everything is flux. Flux, revolutionary organizing, is a process of solving problems and confronting new ones. For me, avant-garde is, or can be, or maybe should be, just that, And since we're talking about art today, for the sake of simplicity, let's substitute the word organization with creation. Revolutionary creation is a process of solving problems and confronting new ones. Pretty straightforward. I also see the term avant-garde as another word for modernism, another word for right now. Charles Baudelaire, living in Paris at the end of the 19th century, wrote in his essay, The Painter of Modern Times, that he wanted to know what artists of his day had to say about waistcoats and boots, not togas and sandals. Part of what we have to figure out is what the role of the artist is going to be right now. And are we in another revolutionary period? The problem with the avant-garde, besides the fact that it tends to be white and male, is this feeling that it all has to be new, a different approach. That you have to ditch ways that have worked before, which is okay, but no matter what you do, it's already different, vastly different, eons different. We have the internet, we have Facebook. Things are changing exponentially. By making work about the world around you, moving through you, triggering your memories, making you feel feelings, and including the specifics of our time, waistcoats, not togas, you're already doing it. But is being a mirror enough? The market doesn't want poetry, and poets don't want the market. It works out really well. Maybe poets are not valued by our society, but that doesn't mean that poets should not value themselves. And if society doesn't care about poets or poetry, it's because we ditched out. We made ourselves irrelevant. Poets, artists, are observers, perceivers, watchers, witnesses, seers, participants, actors, workers, citizens. We have work to do. Sometimes I don't want the world, this country, them, the people we seem to be so afraid of, to know about us, whoever that is, because I don't want it to ruin what I hold so sacred. Sauron's eye turns to us. But I do want people to listen and to hear us, because I value the way we think. I value what we have to say, and honestly, I think we're right. So what's happened since the Poetic Labor Conference? Lately we've been meeting for breakfast and also for dinner, and we have free language classes, Sanskrit, Arabic, Homeric, Greek, Hebrew, Spanish. There's a lot of reading groups. There's this magazine, Try Magazine, which is fantastic. There's the Non-Site Collective, the Daruti Free School, a burgeoning radical lady group inspired by the Riot Girl movement, a bunch of talk series, and just an all-around greater willingness to build community, to reach out to what are often, and I hate this term, called non-poets, and to reach out to each other. And thank goodness. Thank you.